Tuesdays at 5 p.m. and will be rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 5 a.m. Yep. It is almost 6 p.m. Stay tuned for the WBAI Evening News coming up. And while that program is on the air, please consider becoming a financial supporter to this radio station by calling 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. All right, stay tuned.
Good evening. Vice President-elect Joe Biden announces his national security cabinet. A new video surfaces in a police stop a year ago that killed two people, including an officer, and the passing of New York's first black mayor. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI News for Tuesday, November 24th, 2020. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, the Dow, passed the 30,000 milestone today. The possible catalyst? The formal transition from President Donald Trump to President-elect Joe Biden is finally underway. President Donald Trump made a one-minute appearance to take credit, but without taking questions.
I congratulate everybody. The stock market Dow Jones Industrial Average just hit 30,000, which is the highest in history. We've never broken 30,000, and that's just despite everything that's taken place with the pandemic. I'm very thrilled with what's happened on the vaccine front. That's been absolutely incredible. It's nothing like that has ever happened medically, and I think people are acknowledging that, and it's having a big effect. But the stock market's just broken 30,000. Never been broken, that number. That's a sacred number, 30,000. Nobody thought they'd ever see it. That's the ninth time since the beginning of 2020, and it's the 48th time that we've broken records during the Trump administration. And I just want to congratulate all the people within the administration that work so hard. And most importantly, I want to congratulate the people of our country, because there are no people like you. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
On Monday, the General Services Administration ascertained President-elect Joe Biden as the apparent winner of the November 3rd election. The ascertainment clears the way for the transition, allowing President-elect Joe Biden to coordinate with federal agencies its takeover of the government by January 20th, Inauguration Day. In a letter, GSA Administrator Emily Murphy said she had not been pressured by the White House to delay the formal transition. Murphy wrote she didn't take the decision. She didn't make the decision out of fear or favoritism. Trump thanked Murphy in a tweet, saying the administrator had been harassed, threatened, and abused, and that his challenge of the election outcome strongly continues, with strongly in all caps. Meanwhile, Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris introduced their first cabinet-level picks and appointments to key national security and foreign policy posts.
The fact that America is back, ready to lead the world, not retreat from it, once again sit at the head of the table, ready to confront our adversaries and not reject our allies, ready to stand up for our values. In fact, in calls from world leaders that I've had, about 18 of them or 20 so far, I'm not sure the exact number, in the week since we won the election, I've been struck by how much they're looking forward to the United States reasserting its historic role as a global leader, both in the Pacific as well as the Atlantic, all across the world. The team meets this moment, this team behind me. They embody my core beliefs that America is strongest when it works with its allies.
The new team includes close Biden advisors and former Obama administration officials.
As Secretary of State, I nominate Tony Blinken. I've seen him in action. Tony's been one of my closest and most trusted advisors. I know him and his family. Immigrants and refugees, a Holocaust survivor, who taught him to never take for granted the very idea of America as a place of possibilities. As a director of national intelligence, I nominate Avril Haines, the first woman ever to hold this post.
to lead our intelligence community, I didn't pick a politician or a political figure. I picked a professional. She's eminently qualified. And as United States Ambassador to the United Nations, I nominate Linda Thomas Greenfield, a seasoned and distinguished diplomat with 35 years in the Foreign Service who never forgot where she came from, growing up in segregated Louisiana. The eldest of eight, her dad couldn't read or write, but she says he was the smartest person she knew. First in her family to go to graduate from high school, then college. And my national security advisor, I choose Jake Sullivan. He's once-in-a-generation intellect with experience and temperament for one of the toughest jobs in the world. When I was vice president, he served as my national security advisor. He was a top advisor to Secretary of State Clinton. He helped lead the early negotiations that led to the Iran nuclear deal. He helped broker the Gaza ceasefire in 2012, played a key role in Asia-Pacific rebalance in our administration. And as for the man himself, if I had a former Secretary of State who helped negotiate the Paris Climate Accord, or a former presidential nominee, or a former leading senator, or the head of a major climate organization for the job, the fact that I picked the one person who is all of these things speaks unambiguously to my commitment. The world would know that with one of my closest friends, John Kerry, he's speaking for America on one of the most pressing threats of our time.
The nominees made short acceptance statements. Tony Blinken is the Secretary of State nominee. Avril Haines, the first woman to be Director of National Intelligence. And Linda Thomas Greenfield, the new U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations.
If confirmed by the United States Senate, I will do everything I can to earn it. Mr. President-elect, working for you, having you as a mentor and friend, has been the greatest privilege of my professional life. My grandfather, Maurice Blinken, fled pogroms in Russia and made a new life in America. His son, my father, Donald Blinken, served in the United States Air Force during World War II and then as a United States ambassador. He is my role model and my hero. His wife, Vera Blinken, fled communist Hungary as a young girl and help future generations of refugees come to America. My mother, Judith Pizar, builds bridges between America and the world through arts and culture. She is my greatest champion. And my late stepfather, Samuel Pizar, he was one of 900 children in his school in Bialystok, Poland, but the only one to survive the Holocaust after 4 years in concentration camps. At the end of the war, he made a break from a death march into the woods in Bavaria. From his hiding place, he heard a deep rumbling sound. It was a tank, but instead of the Iron Cross, he saw painted on its side a five-pointed white star. He ran to the tank. The hatch opened. An African-American GI looked down at him. He got down on his knees and said the only three words that he knew in English that his mother had taught him before the war. God bless America.
I am grateful and even more so humbled by the trust that you placed in me for this role. Such a tremendous honor. If afforded the opportunity to do so, I will never forget that my role on this team is unique. Better than that of a policy advisor, I will represent to you Congress and the American public, the patriots who comprise our intelligence community. Mr. President-elect, you know that I have never shied away from speaking truth to power, and that will be my charge as Director of National Intelligence, to helping this administration position itself not only against threats such as cyber attacks or terrorism and the proliferation of nuclear, biological, or chemical weapons, but also those challenges that will define the next generation, from climate change to pandemics and corruption.
I'm humbled and honored by the trust that you have placed in me to become a member of your cabinet as ambassador to the United Nations. In the years that I've worked in government, I'm always struck by how only in America would we be where we are today, where life can be hard and cruel, but there's hope in the struggle. There is promise in our dreams, where you learn to believe in yourself and that anything is possible. The challenges we face, a global pandemic, the global economy, the global climate change crisis, mass migration and extreme poverty, social justice, are unrelenting and interconnected, but they're not unresolvable if America is leading the way.
Last but not least, John Kerry, the former senator, secretary of state under President Obama, who was named to a new cabinet level position, climate envoy.
Mr. President-elect, you've put forward a bold, transformative climate plan. But you've also underscored that no country alone can solve this challenge. Even the United States, for all of our industrial strength, is responsible for only 13% of global emissions. To end this crisis, the whole world must come together. You're right to rejoin Paris on day one, and you're right to recognize that Paris alone is not enough. At the global meeting in Glasgow 1 year from now, all nations must raise ambition together, or we will all fail together. And failure is not an option. No one should doubt the determination of this president and vice president. They shouldn't doubt the determination of a country that went to the moon, cured supposedly incurable diseases, and beat back global tyranny to win World War II. This kind of crisis demands that kind of leadership again, and President Biden will provide it.
John Kerry, President-elect Biden's nominee, is the climate envoy, a new cabinet-level position. But another potential high-level nominee, Biden tech guru Bruce Reed, who takes a hard line on tech companies, is running into a little bit more trouble. Two progressive members of Congress, New York's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Minnesota's Ilhan Omar, call Reed a deficit hawk, criticizing his past support for cuts in Social Security and Medicare. They're circulating a petition they've signed by the group Justice Democrats. Ocasio-Cortez has also bitterly criticized Biden over reports he was considering appointing former Chicago mayor and Obama chief of staff Rahm Emanuel as U.S. trade representative. AOC cites the killing of black people by cops in Chicago during Rahm's tenure, including Laquan McDonald, as reasons enough to deny Rahm a top job. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. The family of Antonio Williams joined their attorneys and elected officials today on a Zoom news conference to show new videos of the police killing of the 27-year-old black man in the Bronx who was waiting for a cab. Advocates say footage supports a lawsuit brought by the family against the city alleging the killing of Williams and NYPD Detective Brian Mulkeen, who was at the scene. Mulkeen was killed by friendly fire from other cops. Advocate Ju Yun Kang of Communities United for Police Reform, or CPR, describes what happened.
Antonio was killed in September of 2019, so over a year ago. And he had been standing on the street with a friend who he had been visiting in the Bronx and was waiting for a cab. Sometime after midnight, plainclothes officers jumped out of their car, chased Antonio, beat him, and recklessly shot at least 15 bullets, killing both Antonio Williams as well as NYPD officer Brian Mulkeen. So two lives were lost because of reckless and what we believe is unconstitutional police action.
Ju Yun Kang of Communities United for Police Reform. An attorney for the Williams family, David Rankin, describes what the family learned from the new videos.
We could stop the video there. One thing that you'll notice from seeing them run across the street, there's clearly a tackle and they're wrestling on the ground. But after they roll back on the side of the tree that we can see, I count between 8 and 11 punches to what appears to be Mr. Williams' head. If you're attempting to handcuff someone, taking your arm out to hit them in the head is not at all what is going to get somebody handcuffed. it looks to me from reviewing this video that these are completely unnecessary head punches. And then you'll see an officer jump up and appear to fire a weapon. If we could just play it through to that. You'll see Mr. Williams placed in handcuffs. Doesn't look like he's moving, but they place him in handcuffs. And then after the handcuffs are placed on Mr. Williams, some significant time after handcuffs are placed on Mr. Williams, approximately five minutes from the shooting to to CPR, there's zero reason, one, that you would be performing CPR on somebody who's handcuffed, because that makes the CPR completely ineffective. Two, there's no reason to handcuff him in the first place because it doesn't look like he's moving. And three, they don't even start CPR till over 5 minutes after the shooting. If you're going to provide medical care for somebody, you should do it, of course, immediately. And now you'll see that it's been over 10 minutes later and Mr. Williams is being taken away in an ambulance.
David Rankin is an attorney for the Williams family. According to police accounts, Mulkeen was part of a plainclothes unit, part of a unit investigating potential gang activity near a housing project in the Bronx. When he approached Williams, who was from out of town and visiting friends, Williams ran and was pursued. Police say Mulkeen could then be heard on body camera shouting, "He's reaching for it, he's reaching for it." Six officers, including Mulkeen, fired 15 shots. Police say Williams was in possession of a loaded 32 caliber revolver that was never fired. NYPD has offered no explanation for why Williams was chased and delayed public release of their body cam videos. Antonio Williams' father, Sean Williams, spoke after the video of his son being beaten and shot by police was shown. He says it proves the police were lying all along, making his son's death more senseless just a few days before Thanksgiving.
My son's not around for Thanksgiving now. There's no more going to the court. There's no more hearing him and his brothers argue on the basketball court or they crack jokes with each other. There's no more him seeing him spend time with his son and his daughter and his nephews and cousins. There's no more. So I'm angry. Upset that at this point, no officers have been charged with anything, or is this a normal day for them, but not for my family? As we go through pain and suffering every day, it's not a day gone by that I do not think of my son, or I hear my son or want to hear him. And being strong for the rest of my family as I see them in pain over this whole incident that could have been prevented. Sometimes it just leaves you speechless that at this point you see this and you're like, oh, wow. Regardless of video, regardless of anything, you still see it.
Antonio Williams' father, Sean Williams. The mother of Eric Garner, who was killed in a chokehold by a cop in Staten Island, famously gasping, "I can't breathe," as he died, is Gwen Carr. She says the tragedy is that these deaths didn't need to happen.
I can feel their pain. I know what it is to have an empty seat at the table during these holidays. It's not easy. But most of all, I am sick and tired of these police officers getting away with murder. As in my son's case, they murdered him and tried to justify that his murder was his own fault, as they're doing in the Williams case. That's why we have to stand up, and I am so glad that you have this extra video so the world can see how the police, they lie, they cover up. They do anything to save their own, and this has to stop. Training, they keep talking about more training. Training is not what's going to solve this problem. They've been trained. And the way that they're trained to gun down our people in the Black and brown communities. So Where does the training come in? Where it's not the training, it's the humanity. That's what they need to train them in, humanity, because they have none. When they come into our neighborhoods, why would they jump out and start chasing this young man? Plainclothes police officers, anybody would run. If I was in that situation, I would run too, because I would think I was being mugged. I would think that some guys is just out to, you know, just do damage. White guys after me? Yes. I would think that it was something that was ungodly that they were going to do to me. And then when they have him down, they still shoot. But look at karma. They shot their own. They shot their own. And now they're trying to blame it on poor dead Mr. Williams. No. Training has nothing to do with this. This is deep-seated racism. And it's condoned by the department. That's where we have to go to the top. These police officers are only doing what they are trained to do. They are trained to shoot, to kill. And why would they shoot him when he's already down? If you was in a white community, there never would have ever been a stop, let alone a tussle and a shooting and a killing. So I say, we have to do something about this. We have to stand with these families. There's too many empty seats at the table in the black and brown communities, and nothing is done about it. It's swept under the rug. That's why I commit to keep on fighting, and I will continue to fight for my child and others who has been wrongfully killed, wrongfully hurt, because it is now unacceptable. Thank you.
Gwen Carr, the mother of Eric Garner, who was killed in a police chokehold in Staten Island. An attorney for the Antonio Williams family is Jonathan Moore. He's also represented Eric Garner's family. He says the problem with the NYPD is absolute lack of accountability. He says until cops are punished for the shootings, it will continue.
But what we hope comes out of this lawsuit is an understanding that, as Mrs. Carr said, training is not enough. You have to have a system of accountability in the police department that doesn't exist. When officers engage in misconduct, they need to be identified, disciplined, and if it's serious enough, let go. They don't do that. In the last several years, there have been close to 3,000 or 4,000 complaints of racial profiling filed with the police department. None have been substantiated by the police department. Now, we know that happens, and the fact that none have been substantiated is an outrage. When Commissioner Shea said he was disbanding the anti-crime units, he wasn't exactly telling the truth. They are being reconstituted on a department, on a precinct-wide basis by the police department as needed. We know that plainclothes officers doing what they do, like they did with Antonio Williams in our communities of color, that has been their modus operandi for many years, and it continues to be. And until there is serious disciplinary action to try to get rid of these officers who violate the law, it will continue.
Jonathan Moore is an attorney for Antonio Williams' family. Jonathan Moore is an attorney for Antonio Williams' family. Family members say there's been silence from Mayor de Blasio and the NYPD on whether any officers will be disciplined. The Bronx District Attorney's Office says it's still investigating. The Williams family has been demanding the officers involved be fired from the NYPD and charged by the Bronx DA's office. And New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo is urging caution going into this holiday season, with Thanksgiving just a few days away. He says there's a spike in COVID rates due to increased social activity. Over the past 3 weeks, statewide hospitalization rate has increased 128%. He estimates that this season, the spread of COVID-19 in New York could increase by 20%, and that holiday celebrations have potential for spreading the disease.
The microcluster positivity is 4%. Statewide positivity without the microclusters, the microclusters are the areas that have the most intense infection rates, right? It's 2.6. Overall, it's 2.9. We did 164,000 tests, 47 deaths. That number is up again. And these are not numbers, right? hospitalizations up 132, ICU up, intubations up. We've seen this movie. We've all seen this movie. Positivity goes up. Number of people going to hospitals goes up. Number of people who go from a hospital bed to intensive care goes up. Number of people from intensive care to intubation goes up. And then number of deaths go up. That is the trajectory. This is all too predictable at this point. So, this Thanksgiving, we urge caution. But it's really not going to be just this Thanksgiving. It's really this holiday season is the problem. It just starts on Thanksgiving. Everyone is talking about just Thanksgiving. It's the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday. It's going to be the same message. When we start to get into the holiday season, it's going to be the same message. New York rule is celebrate with no more than 10 people in your household. This caution is not a political issue.
And that's Governor Cuomo. And finally, David Dinkins, New York's first and only black mayor, died last night. Dinkins was mayor in the early 90s, a job he called the greatest on earth. He was a single-term mayor after defeating the garrulous Ed Koch in the Democratic primary. He confronted an exploding crime rate, a surge of homeless people, dwarfed by today's numbers, and a hostile police force that seemed bent on driving him out. He was replaced in a close fight by Rudy Giuliani, who Dinkins had defeated 4 years earlier. A notable event in Giuliani's campaign was a speech to rebellious cops on the steps of City Hall. Some of the cops carried mops and plungers, referring to the mayor in racist terms. Mayor Bill de Blasio was an aide to Dinkins. He eulogized him earlier today.
Dinkins believed that we could be better. He believed we could overcome our divisions. He showed us what it was like to be a gentleman, to be a kind person, no matter what was thrown at him, and a lot was thrown at him. And he always tried to answer the hate with love. It was remarkable serving with him in this building, to see that no matter what was going on out there, he always had that joy that he found. And it was particularly for children. He loved children so deeply, and he did something about it, creating those amazing Beacon after-school programs that continue to this day, that we've actually been expanding to reach more and more kids. This is something he believed in so deeply, everything that we could do for our children. And he had a wisdom, an ability to stay steady no matter how choppy the waters. It was just extraordinary. And it's hard to be that patient and that kind when there's so many troubles all around you, but he did it.
Mayor Bill de Blasio. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, November 24th, 2020. The news is produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson from New York City for the WBAI News. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The previous program was the WBAI Evening News, heard daily at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for the Laura.